Johnny Collinsworth. Welcome back to Adventures in Design. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fair to middling. All right.
Fair to middling. I just do not get that response out here, and that's one of my favorite ones, especially when you hear from a voice like, oh, fair to middling, like that little twang in the voice. I'm like, oh, I am back home. So before we get into some TV talk and beginning of the year talk and give everybody an update on you, let's just bring everybody up to speed. We did one of my very rare podcast interviews where you were on a phone and I couldn't see your face, because my rule is I should always be able to see the person that I'm talking to. And so we did a phoner where you called in because you had no internet, because Bowling Green had just got hit by a like once in a lifetime size tornado. And myself and some really generous folks in the Circle of Trust, we got together and donated some money to friends of yours. And I'm just curious, like, one, how are your friends doing? And two, how is Bowling Green at large doing? How's the recovery effort going? Just, you know, what, maybe a month later?
Well, it's slow going, but not like bad slow going. Like, there are things happening. Like, we got FEMA down here. And, you know, fortunately, everybody in town really pitched in. A lot of people, you know, the areas that it hit, a lot of people really pitched in and went to the neighborhoods and focused on different things and got things moving along. So we're in cleanup phase now, which means that, like, when you drive around, it isn't like you can get through the streets now, and the trees and the are all cut up and waiting for it. Cause I guess like FEMA comes and weighs that stuff and it gives you money towards recovery based on the amount of weight damage that you have. Who knew that? But so there's just like, you can't see a whole house because there's just trees piled up completely on all sides of the house where they've been cut up. So that's going on. Repairs are starting. You know, of course, all the businesses down the main drag had to just be leveled. So you just see flat pads where businesses that you went to weekly or whatever, restaurants and like the guy that's put in every car stereo we ever had back when you immediately took your stereo out of your car and put in
the days.
A custom system, like that guy, you know, just a Bowling Green institution. So that's going on. We had a second round of tornadoes hit a few weeks after. I think it was New Year's Day. Another one. So the parts of town that weren't hit got hit by that one.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. Just stuff. We hit right out on Scottsville Road out by the interstates and bipped through there and right by Jim's house, as a matter of fact, this time. Yeah, he said it was scary AF. I was texting him while it was going on.
Well, yeah, so, I could imagine how scary it would be once you just live through the one that did all of that danger. Like, now you damage. Now you really have an idea of like how serious it can be.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of folks on friends and family talking about, you know, like, oh, shit, you know, now I know what PTSD really is, hearing that wind and all that stuff. So cleanup is going on right now. And there was supposed to be the head of FEMA and Jill Biden come here last week. But then we got a snowstorm.
Oh,
look, like 8 inches to 10 inches of snow here, which, you know, in Kentucky, that's snow.
Oh, yeah. That's like, going to shut things down big time.
Town shut down. I didn't get mail for 4 days. Our northern listeners are probably like, 8 inches of snow, you know, but no, not here.
But what people don't know, though, Connie, is like, I lived in Buffalo, New York for a decade. That city is equipped to handle snow. So when they get something that comes in off the Great Lakes, 2 feet could fall and they could have it cleaned up 2 hours later. I mean, they're equipped for it. And when they roll their eyes at other cities, like, you can't roll your eyes, because why would Louisville or Bowling Green have all the infrastructure for something that happens maybe once every other winter? So it's completely debilitating because there's just not the system in place to handle it, which I love when, like, down in Georgia, they get an ice storm and it just shows everybody on the highway not knowing how to drive on ice and they're just sliding everywhere.
Yeah, that's, you know, we don't even get this every other winter with snow. It's generally an ice storm every other.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's a run on generators and everybody starts freaking out and all that stuff. And but the snow, you know, this time we didn't have any ice except for refreezing, which was great. But all they do here is just pre-salt the road. And then you get a plow once come by during that. And that just blocks everybody in their driveways then. And you've got this mound you got to move to get out. So that happened, the other tornado and everything. But hopefully, you know, things are moving along and folks can. Now, we got a friend who lost his house and he's been put up by his insurance company. He's going to be in a hotel here till like April.
Wow. That's a long time to live in a hotel.
Yes, in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Yeah, it ain't the Ritz-Carlton.
No, I mean, I'm assuming it's not. What about your friends that some of us were able to donate a little bit of money for that just completely lost their entire home? How are they doing?
I think they're doing all right. I have not personally talked to them. Other members of our family talk more to them, you know, on a daily basis, like best friend kind of level. But I do know that I did see a lot of donations kick in. It put them over the hump that they were at to level up and then do another level. Mm-hmm. So I think that they have more than tripled the amount they initially thought that they would get. And yeah. I know that I saw listeners donating. I saw your donations and everyone, you know, super appreciates that. It's, you know, I mean, they lost their family dog. And
I mean, that photo of their, they lived in a trailer, correct?
Yeah,
the photo of their modular home looked just like, imagine that's you. And they were in there when it happened too, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, Jesus. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
There's still one, like, drive from our house to in town, there's still one of the older neighborhoods in town, and we drive past it. It's like, we would never see the neighborhood before. Like, unless you went around to turn the corner and turned in through their entryway. But now, coming from the main road going in, because there's no trees anymore, you see the neighborhood. And then you see also that, oh, there's just like the top, the quarter of the house from the foundation up for like 50 houses.
Wow.
And it's like, this is nuts.
It's going to be insane this summer when construction season gets going and that main thoroughfare where, you know, like blocks and blocks of businesses just got completely wiped out. It's going to be a whole new city by this time next year. You know what I mean? By summer 2023, it's going to be a whole different place because of all this.
Yeah. You know those like then and now books that every town has where they show all the areas in like the 50s and then when they were first built and then they have the 70s, usually the 90s. Well, they've all been going around photographing all of this stuff because it is going to be.
For sure.
This landscape, you could still, in the photos from the 50s, be, you know, look now and go, oh, okay, I see that's where so-and-so is now or whatever, but none of that's left. So it's going to be nuts.
It is nuts how natural disasters can kind of come just through and completely reshape, remanicure the land. And when I lived in Buffalo, not nearly as bad as the tornado you guys got, but the worst weather that I saw there was we got hit with a surprise blizzard on Friday, October 13th. And the problem with getting a blizzard in October, you know, the first half of October, technically at the 13th, is that the trees still had all their leaves on them. Well, the trees can either hold the leaves or hold the snow and the ice, but they can't do all three at once. And so it literally, why it was such a crazy storm is it broke so many trees and then the trees took down the power lines. And afterwards we had FEMA come up to Western New York. And what FEMA did, and I'll be curious if you see this happen where you live, FEMA hired a bunch of out of town crews to come in and do the tree removal. And they essentially put a bounty on every tree's head. And we had two trees in our yard that were not affected by the snowstorm. And we came home one day from work and they'd cut both of our trees down.
Oh,
because that crew was just like, hey, each one of these trees is, you know, $500 or whatever they're making.
Right.
They cut our fucking trees down. And one of them was a beautiful tree in our front yard and they just got rid of it. And then we never had any trees in our front yard. And it really, really upset me because they were clearly just going through, like, you know, the Mandalorian and just collecting a bounty on every tree that they could find.
Yeah. The unscrupulous tree and stump removal people around here have already made the rounds of showing up, telling someone, oh, an elderly person usually, oh, we think this is going to be blah, 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 to remove this, be no problem, be here. They go, and then the bill comes in, it's three times that. Yep. And it's like, okay. The other strange thing, and I mean, I've never been in a disaster zone, so I don't know, but FEMA came and set up this mobile shower and restroom like village in our Walmart parking lot. And I wanted to like park and watch and see what, because I started to think of it like truck stop and like lot lizard kind of like, I mean, that's where I went.
The Bowling Green and I was Brambles.
Like, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I was like, what is going on here? These things are all hours of the day and night. And I'm just like, what's happening over here?
Hey, you know why we're best friends? Because that light bulb went off in your head, like there's restrooms and showers in a there's fucking going on. There's some shady human behavior going on. And not only is it going on, I want to go on the inside and investigate it and see.
Yeah, it's like Jim and I way back in the day, many times we were just looking for something to do, and we were like, hey, let's just drive down to Nashville down Murfreesboro Road and see if we can see any hookers.
Oh, love that. Love that plan.
You just drive down through there, you know, and you hear the gunshots and like look for people running and all that kind of stuff. It was, you know, like adrenaline adventure of the stupidest kind.
100%. I've always known in my city, I'm like, you know what? Let's take the long way home and see what's happening in the seedy part of town, you know? And it's like, it's fascinating to me. When I lived in Toronto, for the first 2 years I lived there, I lived in the neighborhood. And as I took my dog walk at night, I went through all the different flavors of prostitution. I went through, like, you know, the young hot boys are looking for old dudes. I went through the guys that I don't even know if they were gay, but they just needed money for drugs. I went past the trans folks that were, I think, the hottest of the whole bunch. And they were the friendliest. They always would talk to me and the dogs I'd go through. But then the last group that I would hit would be the female traditional street walking hooker that would look like somebody that you would imagine in like a Guns N' Roses video. And Connie, I've toured the country. I've been to every bad neighborhood. I've been knocked out by a Hell's Angel in one punch, beaten up by inner city kids. Like I've kind of done it all in the world of, like, you know, crime and fighting and all this. The scariest person you'll ever meet is a hooker that doesn't give a fuck. I mean, they have eyes like a fucking shark, doll eyes, dead eyes. And they were so intimidating because I thought if I walk past with my dogs, like, I was imagining like 3 months would go by, I'd be like, Candy, what's up? Hey, Tootsie, looking good. There's my girl, Michelle. I thought I would be like fucking totally down with them. No fucking way. I didn't make eye contact with them. I didn't look their way. They were just the scariest people that I'd ever been by in my life.
You were picturing these like the cast of The Deuce. Like you were going to be the guy in the neighborhood who just 100%. Knew all of the prostitutes and they were cool with you and you cracked jokes and you had your little inside thing.
Totally. Looking good in those shoes, Mandy. And it was quite opposite. It was like, keep your head down. Don't make eye contact. They will fucking shiv you in a second.
Yeah. So those have gone now, but I never did go up there and look, but I should have taken that sociological trip.
But this did come in handy for me because I was the runner for the band, was Semisonic, you know, Closing Time.
Oh yeah.
I picked up an odd job and I was the runner for that band. And so I went, they had the worst, shittiest tour manager. This guy was such a fucking dickhead that me and the agent or the guy who booked the show, we ended up stiffing him and running at the end of the night because we thought we would literally like fight the guy and try to kill him because he made me go get a box fan for the drummer because it was the first night of their tour. He's like, can you go get me a fan? He needs a fan that is, give me a crazy measurement, like, you know, 15 inches, 13 inches. So I go to Home Depot. I go and pick up a tape measure and I'm measuring fans and I'm like, okay, the box fan is like, say, 22 inches, so it's 7 inches too big. And they have a circular plastic fan that's 10 inches. Well, having been a musician, I'm going, they don't have the exact size he asked for. But I'm going to get him one smaller because the smaller one will definitely fit in whatever hole this drummer has for a fan, and the bigger one won't. So I'm totally using common sense. And I give him the fan, and he looks at the box and goes, what the fuck is this? I go, it's the fan you asked for. He goes, this says 12-inch fan. I said I needed a 13-inch fan. I go, well, one, they didn't have them, and a smaller fan will work better because it'll obviously fit in the spot. He goes, I don't give a fuck. It's not what I asked for. Go get me what I asked for. I said, dude, I walked up every aisle of Home Depot. They did not have what you asked for. That's your fan. Take it or leave it. So anyways, when I got there, I had to pick up their bus driver and drive him to his hotel. When I was dropping their bus driver off, I go, hey, man, what time do you want me to pick you up? Call time, I think, is 11. He goes, you know where the hookers are at in town? I go, absolutely, I do. He goes, then pick me up at 10 and then pick me up again at 10:45. So I pick him up at his hotel. I drop him off at the hookers. I talk to him about which one looks the most appetizing. I drive around the corner to this shitty fast food place called Harvey's, because these are the Harvey hookers, if anybody knows Toronto. I eat like a burger or whatever, and then I go pick up the dude at, you know, quarter till or whatever, and I take him back to the club. And I go, you know, my dad's a truck driver, you know, just trying to bond down with the guy. And he goes, oh, really? That's cool. He goes, you know the difference between truck drivers and bus drivers for bands? I go, what's that? He goes, we are... He goes, fuck. I ruined his punchline, because his punchline was, they pay for pussy, we don't. And I was like, didn't I just take you to hookers? Because he was trying to make the joke like, you know, we get chicks from the band. And I was like, didn't you just, didn't I just drop you off at hookers, sir?
Did you just pay for it over there?
Didn't you just contradict your catchphrase? So anyways, I told my dad that. I'm like, yeah, the difference between you and this guy is you pay for it. And the guy's like, my dad's like, guy sounds like a fucking asshole. So Connie.
Yeah.
Let's get into some TV talk. You made a list. You made two lists, which goes to show the type of psycho that you are. One list is, well, you tell me what the two different lists are. But I wanted to let everybody know, series in their first season is your first list. And then the second list that you made is series that have multi-seasons but had a strong season in 2021. So this is a weird time of year because it's really cold. Like, the East Coast is getting hit. They had a blizzard last week. This week they have insufferable temperatures. And for whatever reason, all the TV networks are like, nah. We're not going to give you anything right now. We're going to wait till the spring when you get busy, and then we'll start dropping killer shows. So now's a good time to go back and find what you miss. And then after we get done with this, for members of the Circle of Trust, I have a couple of YouTube videos that Connie and I are going to watch along, and you'll be able to watch that over in the COT. So that's the format for the rest of the show. We just had planned for our grand opening to talk about Bowling Green and get into reminiscing about hookers.
Well, when you talk about psychos that made up this list, that would be Stacy, not me, because I had little post-it notes all around from shows and notes about them, and I was struggling trying to even start my list. She was like, I think you should just do ones that are new and ones that are repeat seasons. And I was like, perfect. That's what she does for me. She clears up my chaos, my brain fog, because I was sitting there trying to do a hierarchy of, well, but this one is new, so how can I compare it to that this is two solid seasons of this and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, that she's the psycho on that one, not me. I'm the regular psycho. So my two sections, were series in their first season, a series that have multi-season but have particularly strong current. So we'll start with section one. And I kind of, these are sort of in order of just what, when I thought about it, what came as top and then go in order.
Well, then you have to go Casey Kasem, and you have to go starting at number 11. You got to go from the bottom up to the top, so people listen longer.
We'll go from the bottom. All right. Well, fuck it. We'll do it live. All right. 11, Midnight Mass.
I have not watched this one. It's over on Netflix. I've heard people talk about it. Is it like horror? Because that's what the name says to me.
It's horror in like that 70s vein of like Night Stalker movie of the week horror.
Oh.
You know, like it's not like, it's like mystery, spook. Did you watch, I know you watched Haunting of Hill House, right?
I did not watch that one.
Okay, well, this is the same guy. He's got a three-peat going on here. He's got Haunting of Hill House, the Bly Manor show on Netflix, and then this was the third one. And I watched it over two nights, watched it at night. It was spooky. It kind of creeped me out. It's got Matt Saracen in it. It's got some a guy that I did not know who plays the main priest guy in it. You know, it's got religion. It's set in an isolated island with a very small population where like the people have to take a ferry into town.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a bunch of kooks on the island. I call it like a mystery spooky, not horror. I highly recommend it.
Supernatural? Because if it's supernatural, I lose Beth.
Only in if you would consider like creatures, like a creature that might haunt a place being supernatural. It's not like crazy.
Okay.
Supernatural.
Not like Lost.
You might lose her because it's also just like, you really gotta like listen to some long monologues, but I know like you're a put the headphones on and watch kind of person. So you'll be into it. Okay. Number 10, I'm going to CBS here.
Wow. Wow. You know, I hate CBS.
I put a tidbit in here saying, you know, yes, this is a network sitcom, but it's based on a British comedy. So okay. It's got some good roots there. The synopsis for me, the best way I could put it, was hipster Brooklyn couple moves into an inherited mansion, wants to convert it into a B&B. Wife bonks her head and can see and converse with centuries of ghosts that have died in the home.
It doesn't sound very CBS. I'll give you that.
Yeah, right. It's like we've got a ghost from, you know, Viking times. We've got a Native American. We've got a civil, a Revolutionary War.
I saw a preview or a trailer for this, like when I was watching football, and I saw it and go, what the fuck are they doing over there? And now I know that you're watching this. Jesus.
It's really the ghosts, because their relation, they've lived with each other for hundreds of years, and things like the fact that they've never seen TV, and then this hipster couple moves in and starts watching the reality. Like, I think they watched that one that you watch, the Under Deck or whatever that thing is.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like a show that I used to watch where there was a Dracula, a werewolf, and I can't remember, and a ghost, and they all lived in a house.
Oh, it was a Canadian show. Yeah. I loved that show. The doctor, there was one of them was a doctor, the bad boy vampire, and the girl who died by strangulation of her, or fell and hit her head or something.
Yeah, and she was, her boyfriend knocked her down the steps, yes, and she was stuck in the house. She was a ghost, and the werewolf and the Dracula, they both lived in our world. But the Dracula, he'd been alive for 100 years, so they could go back into Dracula times. It was fucking horrible. But I fell into love with the chemistry of the three of them.
And that's what it is about this. The leads are okay, but we like the ghosts and their interactions with these people, the things that they get like delighted about and then are like traumatized by, like the TV, the couple leaves for a trip and the TV goes into sleep mode. Well, they can't touch anything to turn it back on. It's real goofy, but I mean, you know, we were heading back into a surge. We were knowing we were locking down. We were
sometimes
like,
"Goofy."
Yeah, let's just look at this.
Yeah,
and it's pretty well done. So, all right, we'll move up.
The show that I watched, the Dracula, always had a funny pickle that he got into, where it's like everybody remembers being like in high school and you're dating and you're like, oh, we shouldn't have sex, even though it's like if you're like doing blowjobs and all cungalinas, you might as well just go for fucking penetration. But there's this weird thing that we do when we're in high school. Oh, we shouldn't go that far. And the poor Dracula, you know, it's like fucking was no problem. Imagine being with a girl and like, all I want to do is fucking eat her neck and feed myself. You know what I mean? So he would always just try to show some sort of constraint. I was like, man, that's a whole different way of dating Dracula.
Yeah, it was that whole Buffy Angel thing of like Angel when he was bad, and was he going to feed off, and Spike too. Is he going to feed off Buffy? That whole thing was in that show. That was a good one. I wish I could remember the name of it, but I cannot. It's currently streaming though, because I saw it in some app that I passed through.
Artie Lang I'm sorry, real quick to cut you off. Yeah. Artie Lang told this quick little joke where his grandfather or uncle would just, you know, New Jersey grandfather, uncle would just sit in a chair and watch TV all day. And he never knew the name of any of the shows he watched. Like my mama would be like, Marky, did you watch Balky last night? And Artie Lang's uncle or whatever loved Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but he called it, you know, Jew Broad that fights Draculas.
I think that's what the TV guide listed it as too. I don't know. All right, moving up. Number 9. This was one from that you and I talked about a lot, and I know you were looking forward to. I delayed it a little bit because I wanted to watch it. It was an Apple
all
show,
at once.
So I wanted to get at least up to the finale and then watch the finale. Hawkeye.
Enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. I love how they crowbarred in Christmas. And I'll say this. I give a lot of shows a lot of shit about crowbarring in diversity. This show nailed it. So if that actor decides to no longer be Hawkeye and they want to let Seinfeld's daughter do it, it's set up to where she could easily become the Hawkeye and just take over that spot, and it feels completely natural. They gave her an amazing storyline. Obviously, one of our favorite actresses ever played her mother.
Vera Farmiga.
Yes. We love her.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really good. It was fun. It didn't take itself too seriously. And I think out of everything that they've done over on Disney Plus, I feel like this one felt most like it could have been a movie. Like if they would have edited it tight and maybe just put a little bit more budget and taking some of the smaller stories out of it, it felt the most like a regular Marvel movie. It had the action, it had the humor. I'm still not sure why Lucky the One-Eyed Dog was in there. I don't really know what that storyline was or where it was supposed to go, but I really enjoyed it. And the guy that played her mom's love interest, funny as fuck, that actor. Like, he played that character so well.
It was just well cast in all of those. I mean, Hailee Steinfeld, perfect as Kate Bishop. I mean, she's really good. I watch another show with her in it, and she was also in like True Grit, the remake of that John Wayne movie. She was, when she was a kid, got Oscar nominated. She was great in that. She's got like really good comedic timing. She's got that little bit of like shitty angst thing, but it doesn't become something that's annoying. I'd like the Christmas thing. I don't even care about Hawkeye. I don't care about that character in any of the Marvel stuff. And then I was like, shit, because I like this, what they're doing. You know, it's like, I don't know what they do wrong in those with him, but I didn't care anything about him. But now I'm like, fuck, I care about this character. Shit. And then we got if people haven't seen it, spoiler, sorry, turn it off. But at the end, we get that little dip of Linda Cardellini.
Oh. We love her. We love her. That's another one of our favorites that was in that show.
And dropping her in that she was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, so yeah, where's that going?
Working on the inside. It was really good. I enjoyed it. I thought that it really kept my attention, and it seemed like, you know, looking where Disney or Marvel is at with, you know, now they have the cinematic universe and they have the TV universe, and they're trying to keep them all on the same plane. It really goes to show where they can take some of the smaller characters, give them a little bit more time and space, and really make you, God damn it, getting just, I hate text threads. Don't ever fucking put me in a text thread conversation, because I don't care.
I will not do it.
I don't care. It really has become a great way to take characters that you didn't really know that much about, give them more space, because then they're not standing next to Thor or Iron Man, and they kind of get to do their own thing. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. And like I said, it was a perfect way to give a female heroine like a great backstory, to integrate her into things. And if it's tag, you're it. I'm totally cool with it. It works perfectly.
Right. All right. We'll move up to number 8. I think you maybe recommended this one. Maybe it wasn't. I'm not sure. HBO Max's White Lotus.
This is one people have asked me if I'm watched, and I have not touched it yet.
Okay. Well, season 2 is coming. I don't know if it's going to be that it's a different set of people in a different place. I think I described it as rich people being obnoxious and oblivious while dipping in and out of various oddball stories at a tropical resort.
Sounds very familiar to my lifestyle, so I might be into this.
You might. Yeah. It's just got really good casting again. There's this actor, and I don't remember his name, but he pops up in things, and I love him. He was like the love interest in the that How to Be Single movie with Dakota Johnson and Leslie Mann. Did you see that one?
No.
This guy's, he's in so endearing and funny and like every man. So if you're watching White Lotus, he plays a total jerk, totally against type and against how he'd been cast before. But it's odd. It's just putting people in a weird setting and then dipping into their interpersonal things. Connie Britton is in it. So that's always a good one.
Love her.
Yeah. All right. We'll go up to number 7. I'm sure that no one else listening to this has watched this. It's we watched it via BBC One via Vimeo when it was out.
Wow. That's a long stretch to get to this content. You have fucking got to the end of the internet, my friend.
Okay, so I didn't even get it off Vimeo. Someone put a link to the Vimeo in a Facebook group I'm in that's dedicated to this, another show that this actress is on. And they were like, oh, this is out, and here's how you can watch it. And so then each week I'd have to go find it in that thread and click on it for us to watch it and cast it up to the fucking TV. And we did it every week. Vigil. It's BBC One, but now it's on Peacock. So everybody can just watch it on Peacock. They picked it up and start streaming it in December. It's got Saran Jones, who has made a string of British shows that we really, really like. She usually plays a cop or something, and she is again. This starts off with we see the British Navy on a submarine. someone has been killed in questionable circumstances, and she gets assigned to go and investigate, and she has to investigate on the ship because it can't come to dock because it's part of the nuclear initiative that keeps all the countries in check.
Yeah.
Like, we're out here too, so you can't come into this place and you can't leave and blah, blah, blah. So she has to go onto this boat and investigate. Then you find out that she was in a traumatic car wreck where she and her fiance and his daughter went underwater, and she's had an underwater experience that has left her claustrophobic and on heavily medicated to deal with all of this stuff. So they take her out to this. They're like, oh, yeah, you're going to have to go out there, and you're out there for 3 days. And she's like, okay.
In a submarine. And,
huh?
She has to go in a submarine?
On a submarine. That can't surface at all. And then more things happen on the boat because it's a murder mystery on there, of a crime case, to where she's only brought enough medicine, which is a rookie mistake. She's only brought enough medicine for the time she thinks she's going to be there.
No,
that keeps all this shit at bay. And so she's on the boat longer. An extended period of time. Anyway, it's Saran Jones is the actress. You guys should definitely look her up. She's got a thing on Netflix called Dr. Foster, Hulu, Scott and Bailey, HBO, Gentleman Jack. She's one of our absolute favorites. And Vigil is a good old fashioned, like, crime, mystery, people trapped in uncomfortable situations.
With my dyslexic eye, I first thought that you'd watched a show called Virgil, which was going to be a documentary about the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase's black bodyguard that just wore the little bow tie and did all of his dirty work and just threw. Remember when they would, in the WWF, back when that's what it was called, he'd get a kid from the crowd and be like, if you can do 10 push-ups, I'll give you $100. And that kid would get to like the ninth push-up, and then Ted DiBiase would put his foot on his back so he couldn't push up, and he wouldn't give him the money.
Hey, you've got some connections out there. Maybe you need to pitch that to somebody. That sounds like a good one. All right, we'll move up to one that probably at the time that I wrote this, there were only a couple episodes out, so it was at number 6. It'd probably shoot right up to 2 or 1. Or 2 or 3 now, but Yellow Jacket's on Showtime.
We are 2 episodes into it. The amount of money that they must have spent on the scoring, the soundtrack, is unreal. It's every great song from the fucking 90s, and they don't abuse it. They use just enough of the song to get you going, and then they'll clip it and go into another song. This is the story of an all-girls soccer team.
Yeah.
That they're on a plane that crash lands. That's, you understand that right from the beginning. That was shown in the trailer. I knew that before I clicked play on episode 1, so it's not a spoiler. And then it just becomes a dual storyline of them trying to survive and them dealing with the aftermath as adults. It's fucking perfect after 2 episodes, and it doesn't look like it's going to slow down.
No, we've watched all 9. The finale is Sunday. I'm going to be up when it drops on
the
streaming. That good. Yeah. It's got one of our other all-time favorites, Melanie Lynskey.
As so sexy.
The adult version of one of the girls. Again, this isn't a spoiler. You find it out in the first episode. But we see some people that are back in modern times, and not all of them. So what happened? They were stranded for 19 months out there. So what happens? Are there other people out there that we just haven't seen yet?
Yeah.
Possibly. What did they do? That's this thing that they say many times in even the first 2 episodes, we did some bad things. We did some horrible things. We've done worse things like that. It's just so good. The acting is so good. The fact that they're matching up the modern day versions to the teenager versions. Somebody did overtime on casting on this.
Yeah, too. And they also have Juliette Lewis on it, who's one of my all-time favorites.
And Christina Ricci.
Christina, yes. Ricci, too. I didn't even realize, I knew Juliette Lewis was on the show, and that's kind of what got me into it, because I have just loved her from the beginning. And then I was like, Beth goes, holy shit, that's Christina Ricci. And I'm like, oh my God, because ever since Buffalo 66, I've been in love with her. Like, that is one of the all-time best movies, even though it is such a weird movie.
Yeah, she always makes interesting choices, and this is, again, interesting choice.
I have a question for you while we're here on Showtime. I am also 2 episodes into Dexter, and have not felt inclined to hit episode 3. It seems that they learned nothing, nada, over their 10-year break.
The first episode of it, I put it off and didn't watch it, and just watched it this past weekend. Watched it all this past weekend. The first episode, I was like, okay, I think we're just going to do what we did before, and I don't care. But they drew me in again with the setting. If you can get it in a setting, a small town,
yeah,
different characters, how they all interact and relate. And God, I feel damn, like his I'm new in girlfriend's so enclosed. Hot, too. What?
His new girlfriend is so hot.
Yes.
Who ironically looks a lot like his sister.
Stacy pointed that out. Yeah, she's like, oh, okay, his new girlfriend looks just like his sister, who was in real life his ex-wife.
Yes, so, and from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes. So I stuck it out through the second. I was like, well, I'll watch the second. Then I just got, and I really like the kid that plays, spoiler, his son.
Yeah.
I thought that actor was good and doing a good job in it. I watched the whole thing. Then the finale was out. And I told Stacey, I felt like, because Dexter did such a faceplant for their original ending, it was horrible. The whole last season was shitty, and then the ending was horrible. But I'm like, if they had that season, and then that wasn't the last season, and this was the last season of the whole show, me having seen it to the end now, I would have felt better about the ending.
Okay. Now, do you think that this will be an isolated season? Will they come back for another one of these Dexter shows?
They've left it where we could go in a direction. I don't think it's a direction anyone cares about going in, and that was made clear to me by looking at comments too, that everybody else was like, I don't really care about the rest of this story. I felt like it ended fine, and if they'd have made an extra season of Dexter and this was the last one, we had time jumped up,
yeah,
and we were seeing, you know, we see Dexter get out in that logging truck, and that's what we see. This is like the continuation of that, and if we'd seen this one tight season, there are some storylines that were dropped, some writing things where like, okay, that makes no sense. Why are we doing that? Why do we even have this character? So they kind of rushed it at the end. But anyway, if it had been the last season of Dexter, I think people would have felt differently about the
whole interesting show. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to finish it just because I'm in this, yeah, far. I can't turn away, but I've only got so much TV, yeah, time.
I know. I've discovered that with all this list. Number 5, Sex Lives of College Girls on HBO Max, created by Mindy Kaling, who drives me absolutely nuts on The Office and in a lot of other stuff that she does. But things where she writes, I really like it. It's like I think I described it in here as Sex in the City meets that movie Blockers.
I couldn't finish the first episode. It was too monologue-y. I don't like the cameras that they use. Like, I love girls. I love the template of, you know, four young ladies trying to figure out their sexuality. So I enjoy all of that. The jokes and the writing was just, it felt like a CBS show. It was way too obvious for me.
It's a pilot, and you're breaking the first rule of television. You can't judge going back by not watching the pilot. So I'll give you that. I think I actually said that to some people in the comments. I was like, get through the first one and then watch the rest of it. Anyway, so I recommend it for anyone that wants something that seems to be light, but is not going to end up being light when you watch it. Number 4, now watched it twice because Stacy wanted to watch it, so rewatched it. Only Murders in the Building on Hulu.
So that one I was conflicted on because I like Steve Martin. Let me rephrase that. I love Steve Martin, and I think Martin Short is probably one of the funniest people ever. Like, just, he cannot help. He's like what Jim Carrey aspires to be, because he's just funny all the time, but not, he doesn't cross that obnoxious line that I thought that Robin Williams and Jim Carrey crosses.
And you don't see it coming with him. It's not, he's not telegraphing his,
yeah,
gestures and his facials and his, you know, his timing is excellent.
He's just mentally moving 3 steps ahead of everybody, and you're talking and he already knows the punchline to a sentence you haven't finished yet. Like, he's just brilliant. But I was like, I don't know. I got a vibe that it was going to be like watching a Broadway play. I don't know why I got that vibe, but I had in my mind that it was going to be more like watching a play than a TV show.
I didn't get that at all.
I mean, I'm just stereotyping. Like, I just drew that conclusion, yeah, on my own. And no. Selena Gomez is in it too, right?
Yeah. And she's good. She's good. She got a nomination, I think, for something, Golden Globe or something for it. I highly enjoyed it. Like I said, watched it twice. I can only just say that I was completely entertained and surprised by it. I was like, oh, I don't know about this one. I love these two, but again, all the things that you said. And then immediately I was just like, oh, I get what they're doing. Huh. You know, and it's really good. And they're already filming season two. So,
I mean, Steve Martin is like a for real genius. Like, his intellect is off the charts, and an amazing writer, an amazing actor, can play the strings off of a banjo. I mean, the guy can literally do it all. And I went back and watched an old Christmas movie of his when we were digging. Mixed Nuts was.
It's Mixed Nuts.
Yeah.
This is what this show is. It's Mixed Nuts.
Oh. Well, then I might be interested, because we watched that movie. Juliette Lewis was in it. And it was fucking great. I mean, it was completely obvious. But in that 90 minutes, you got lost in their little world. And wanting to watch that movie commercial free and wanting to watch all of the Office Christmas episodes in their entirety is how I became a Peacock subscriber.
Yeah. So I was going to bring it up before you brought it up, but it's because I was trying to think of how to describe it without saying what I always say. It's like people in their own little world. This building is a bubble, and they only go out of it once or twice for all of this. But you've got all the characters in the building, and some of them live there for 25, 30 years. And then there's the murder mystery. And then they are obsessed with the podcast is how they meet up.
Mm.
They randomly discover that they are obsessed with Tina Fey's true crime podcast and become friends over that.
Is Tina Fey in it?
Yes.
Oh, well, now we're talking.
Yeah, it's very little, but she is in it.
Yeah, I just need a little of her.
So they in turn become involved in this own thing, and Martin Short is a Broadway guy, and he immediately is like, oh, we can make a podcast about this. So it's about them making a podcast about the thing that they have come into.
I think I'm sold. Are they 30-minute episodes?
Yes. It's in and out. You can watch it in no time.
And it's on Hulu, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And I would recommend a Hulu subscription to anyone just to watch Pen 15, which just wrapped up its entirety. They just did their series finale. Two adult women play themselves in middle school, which means that they – quote unquote, make out with real kids that are like 10 years old. They do a lot of like trick shots and stuff so that it's not really them, like, you know, molesting a child, but seeing adults play themselves, and they lean into the most awkward spots of like getting your period for the first time and like spotting through and like getting a shitty haircut from your mom or giving a blowjob for the first time and not knowing what to do with the fucking semen. Like, this show is so unapologetically brutal about being like in your early teens and figuring out your life. It is a must watch. I highly recommend it. 5 stars.
Oh, yeah. It's so realism of awkwardness. Like, you are right back in your own skin crawling.
It'll take about you there.
The situations that you've been in that they are
100%.
It's so good. Yeah, that's a good one too. All right, let's move up to one that I know we both love. This is my number 3 of the year, Physical on Apple Plus.
So recommend this one as well. The way that it's shot, it's beautiful. The color grading's amazing. It just so happens to be filmed in my neighborhood, which is always fun to see. It is so good, and I'll give men this suggestion. If you've ever wondered what the complexity that society has put into the female brain, this will let you go there for 30 minutes at a time. Like, the way that Jennifer Beal processes – that's her name, right? Is that who the main woman is?
That's Rose Byrne.
Sorry.
Yeah.
The way that she processes – every conversation, like, a man talks to her, she gives her inner dialogue, and then she says what she's supposed to say. Fucking fascinating.
Men will know. I know that women know this, but men will know because they've seen women do that. When you say something incredibly dumb to a woman and there's a 3-second pause while she looks at you before she speaks, we hear that 3 seconds in her head.
It's made me question, though, like, how many times in my own life was I just talking to a cashier or working at the Gap, folding denim, like, it makes me question literally every conversation I've had with a woman. I'm like, she fucking hated me. Like, she literally was like, just stop talking to me, you fucking asshole. Like, it's made me just not want to have small talk with women ever fucking again.
Yeah, it's so, I've not heard back from so many people that I've said, hey, watch this, because I think it comes off as a lot right away.
Yeah.
A lot to take in. The songs, the music, the setting, her, then that dialogue stuff. I think people are like, oh, I got to pay attention to this, and they don't stick with it, and they really should, because I cannot wait for the rest of it. I kind of want to live in that world again. Like, take me to that mall. I'm happy for forever. Take me there.
And her, the woman that she sort of idolizes and worships, that drives the Volkswagen convertible, the Carmagia.
Yeah.
She is like, if you were to take a stock photo out of my brain of like every girl I had a crush on at that time in the 80s, that's what it looks like. Like the frosted blonde hair, the big bangs, the slouchy socks. You know what I mean? Like that woman, like, perfectly is in that time period.
Yeah, the creators and the props people, the hair, the makeup, the everything to give you a look of a show, they deserve something, because a lot of shows try to do a period piece and they just go with the schlocky. Let's put a Farrah Fawcett poster on the wall.
Right.
Let's put this floral couch on this shag carpet and we'll put a wooden spoon on the wall. It's like, no, this shit looks like you've stepped into a time capsule.
They went the whole way.
Yeah.
By the way, their home, their family home, is fucking amazing house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Love that thing.
It's meant to be like just like a schlocky kind of
middle class. Yeah, 70s like modernism home. Like, no, I would die to live there.
If I'd lived in that house then or now, I'd be fucking stoked. All right, number two, Hacks on HBO Max. 30-minute comedy. First episode comes on and I'm like, okay, this trailer for this wasn't very good. A lot of these things were in this trailer. Okay, I see we're pitting the older generation against the Gen Z people. We're going to have some maybe social justice going on here. It's a Me Too. We're going to touch on, okay, this. And then by the end of it, of the first episode, I'm like, holy fuck, what am I watching? Jean Smart is so fucking good. I mean, has she ever done a bad thing that I can think of? No. When she was in Watchmen, I mean, I want a whole show about her character in Watchmen. For Mayor of Easttown, her playing Kate Winslet's mayor's mother, I would watch just a show about the two of them if there was nothing else involved in it. So she plays a woman who has a residency in Las Vegas. She's a comedian. She's, in my mind, supposed to be like a combo of a Roseanne Barr back then meets a Joan Rivers meets Katie Sagal. Married with Children type character. Like, she had a sitcom. She was partnered with a husband. She was like a big deal. She had an opportunity to become a late night host. And we don't know why, but she's ended up in this two shows a day on the strip, like still dressing like she's from maybe the Dynasty era. You know, she's really, I guess, I hope I'm using this word correctly, seems acerbic. Like, she has an assistant that she talks to like shit. She bosses everyone around on the, you know, she seems like not a nice person. She's super successful, uber rich, lives in this palace in Las Vegas. She's very regimented, all of these things. And then this rest of this show with her relationship with this young writer who has been canceled in Hollywood, a comedy writer. And the agent's like, the only thing I can get you is going out to write jokes for this person. And she doesn't want to go because she sees her as like how people saw Joan Rivers towards the end of her career.
Yeah.
You know, as like picking on people and unfunny and out of touch and all this stuff. So anyway, it's about their two.
Great.
It's about the two of them, their relationship. And it's just so, so good. They've won like every award they've been nominated for it. There's a second season already coming. 30-minute show, HBO Sunday nights. It's perfect.
I'm interested in it because I didn't realize that's what it was, because I saw the cover. I'm like, how's she going to hack into the mainframe? She doesn't look like she knows anything about computers. How is she going to pull any of this off? Now that I know what it's about, I'm more into it.
She's got a jitterbug. You can't hack on a jitterbug.
You can't get into the central computer with the jitterbug. What do you have for your number one?
I mean, anybody that's listened to me all year or been on any of my socials has to know it's Mayor of Easttown.
Yeah, have not started it yet. It has become, anybody who's watched it highly recommends it. It's on my list. I just thought Yellow Jackets first.
Yeah, okay, yeah, because it's current and going on right now. But The Mayor, you're going to tear through it. I think it's a wife watcher, okay. For sure. As I describe it here, it's a TV show about women and their relationships, a show about strength and how and when to have it and to let it go, a show about growing up and living as an adult in a town where you can't have secrets. So,
I want to try it out. It sounds interesting. Here's a couple that Connie had on a returning list that I wanted to talk about. The Ted Lasso season 2 was phenomenal. Like, I thought it was really, really good. They went around and really gave character development. We went back during the holidays and rewatched the holiday episode that they did because it's such a great isolated episode. And I love when, you know, Ted Lasso did that. We go back and watch those Office episodes. I love when shows do that. Shrill over on Hulu is another great female-led show with A.D. Bryant from SNL fame. Fantastic show. Really, really sad that it goes away. The guy that played her fucking shithead boyfriend nailed it with his Alcatraz podcast, Talking Traz.
It's just so clever and smart and like doesn't take the viewer as a fool, that show.
I love both of those on your list. And a couple of things that I got into over the holiday break that I wanted to talk about was went back and watched The Happiest Season, which is like the first big mainstream gay Christmas movie.
I did too.
I loved it even more the second time. And the second watch through a holiday special or a holiday pass, you know, the next holiday over, I just knew like this is when we watch every holiday because it just hits all the marks.
It's a perfect Christmas movie, and it's just got the gay part in it too. And it's not done like a schlocky, bad gay, because most gay stuff is not very good if it's completely gay focused. Update. The Aubrey Plaza character in there is getting her own movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the friend, the former girlfriend. Yeah, because that relationship, that was one of the best parts of that. But anyway, just to update that there's going to be another one, and that Aubrey Plaza will also be getting a movie. So
I think what makes it such a great movie after seeing it, you know, a year later, is that it has the holidays in it, and it has love in it, but it has that perfect ingredient for a good love story of forbidden love, and forbidden love that's unjustly forbidden. And it's I thought, oh, they just crowbarred Dan Levy in it because he was so hot with his own show. But watching it a second time, he does a lot of heavy lifting, and he's really, really like the sage advice when there's some complications on coming out and whose responsibility it is. And if you're the other person in the relationship, how you handle it. Like, it's just so well done. I fucking love it.
The speech he gives to Kristen Stewart in the parking lot outside of the house. That's the
one. Gave me chills.
Where he says, like, you have to give, basically saying your experience isn't everyone's experience, and you really need to remember that. Yeah. And there are reasons, you know, something might have been fine and great for you, and so you think it'll be fine and great for everybody else, and it's not.
Yeah. Really, really great. And then we watched a movie over the break. Have you seen the movie that they made about Tammy Faye Baker?
I put on, I reviewed it 10 out of 5 stars. Yes. I loved it.
It was so great. And I can't believe how well Andrew Garfield was able to talk just like Jim Baker.
Within like 3 minutes, I was like, Stacey, she's killing it, but he got this voice perfectly. The movement of his face, the smile while he's talking, the whole thing. It's so well done.
So do you think he was a closet homosexual or is a closeted homosexual?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It wasn't even like a door with a lock. It was he had one of those bifold doors on his closet.
It was like when you just put those beads in a closet when you're in college.
He's like this the whole time, just looking out the beads.
I mean, they were always fascinating. And you and I grew up in the South during TV evangelism's like peak. You know, we knew Jimmy Swaggart. We knew the Bakers, you know, Oral Roberts. Like, these were just names that were in our households. Like, these were like fixtures in our childhood, Pat Robinson. And them doing a movie on it and sort of showing the underbelly of it was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I had already been a fan of the documentary about her. And then when this was coming out, I was like, okay, I wonder what we're going to get. And it's a classic biopic. I mean, there are movies that you watch, they're touchstones to biopics, something like Coal Miner's Daughter.
Yeah.
You know, that is just, it's an excellent movie. It tells a story, really lets you into what's going on, but does it in like a really well-made way. There are bad ones, like I think that piece of trash Freddie Mercury movie, piece of garbage.
Didn't like that one, huh?
Oh God, no. Horrible. It's a classic movie, but you know, yeah, we did grow up with the height of this, and you know, I did not come from a religious household whatsoever, but I came from a TV household, and I came from a household where I was basically the only kid because my brother and sister had already moved out. And so I would watch like Dave Letterman every night going to bed. Oh, and yeah, if I couldn't go to sleep, I would put that on because it was highly entertaining and they were talking to you and you were involved in things. I didn't believe in anything that they were saying, but it was a spectacle and it was on 24 hours. So I watched a lot of that growing up. So I got a relationship with Tammy Faye from way back.
I didn't realize that she was such an ally in a time when that was so faux pas to be an ally in that scene. This is my relationship with all that stuff. I can remember my dad, not once, not twice, not three times, sitting down with Momo and be like, you can't send money to Jimmy Swaggart. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Momo never owned a house, always lived in an apartment, never drove a new car, lived paycheck to paycheck, and was suckered in and was sending him money. And, you know, my old man was such a good son to his dad. My dad was a better son to his mom than I have been a son to him. You know, like he paid her bills and brought her groceries. I mean, he just every Saturday he went over to his mom's house and like did something for her, and he just was on her like, you cannot send these guys money, you know. And then when the prostitution thing came out, and it's weird because you watch that and Jessica Hahn pops up, and Jessica Hahn is a fixture in our Stern life, you know. So it's like all these worlds kind of collide. It's so fascinating.
That Jessica Hahn, man, she still, look at those pictures. She was so perfect, though.
She was.
It's the scandal. It's all the like dirtiness of it, and she was attractive, and
yeah.
And you're like, and then this guy, and ugh, is a whole.
You could see how somebody scandal slipped into her web of seduction very, very easily. Another show that Beth and I wrapped up over on HBO. It's called Generation, and in the middle of the word, they use a plus sign instead of a T, so it probably is a little bit tricky to find it. Young kids in LA, everybody is on a sexual spectrum. Straight doesn't even exist anymore. And it was really fun to watch because they actually talk like teens. You know, it's not like 90210 where Brandon's a freshman high school is like, Andrea, if we don't get the school newspaper out, what is the principal going to think? It's like all these kids are like, so like, you going to fuck them or what, bitch? And you're just, it's just dumb. They're just dumb, but it's realistic. And it deals a lot with like sexuality and being trapped under your parents and rule and all that stuff. And I don't know. It was a really, really well done show.
Yeah. I haven't gotten in on that one yet, but it's on my list. But as you can see, I had a lot of watching that I did. One I do want to bring up real quick that started back on Sunday night was Euphoria. I know, I don't think that you ever stuck with it because of the themes and things.
It got a little too sexual abusey for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in it, but I mean, I just wanted to mention it because of what you said about there being no like they're talking like real kids do.
Yeah.
And you know, people are shocked and appalled, like parent age people of kids these ages, of the kids in Euphoria. Well, they're older, but they're characters. I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, this is so horrible. It's like, this real life. Yeah. You know, what you're seeing is going on. You don't know your kids are doing that, but they're doing it.
Yeah.
But the first episode popped up on Sunday for the second season. The first 10 minutes of that gives the making the sauce scene in Goodfellas a run for its money as like craziest opening little thing. It just came out swinging. Also, Righteous Gemstones came back and they came out swinging with the first two episodes.
So we couldn't remember if we had finished Righteous Gemstones or not, because we remember being like kind of not as good as Eastbound and Down, and Vice Principal started out kind of shitty but got to a really good spot as it went on. So we tried to watch the first episode and realized that we were watching episode 1, season 1, and didn't really remember much. So I'm like, what do we do, Beth? Do we like jump in the middle somewhere? Like, how do we get back into it? Because I love Danny McBride, and him kicking the shit out of TV evangelism is just like, even if the show doesn't tell the best story, you know there will be amazing moments. And forgive me for not knowing the name of the actor, but the woman that plays his sister that was also in Vice Principals, she is fucking funny as fuck. And it's rare that somebody can out-funny Danny McBride, but oh my God, does she do it often.
And in this current season, already in two episodes, she's kicked it up even into the stratosphere of what she was doing. Also, did you get as far in your initial watchings for Walton Goggins?
Yes, I did see him pop up. And man, you know, I know him originally. I think I first met him in Justified, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was a villain, and he was a smooth talking, like, hillbilly. Well, I don't know. You think you're going to go in there? Because my pappy tell me something a little bit different there, Raymond. And then you see him in Vice Principals, and you're like, oh my God, he's an amazing comedic actor as well. And he played the trans character in Sons of Anarchy. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I totally remember
that. They went the whole way. They put tits on him and everything. It was crazy.
He also had a CBS comedy this past, I guess it was 2020.
I saw that.
I watched it all. It wasn't very good, but I watched it for him. It's canceled now. But just a side note, that somebody coming from that, where he came from, Justified, Righteous Gemstones, Sons of Anarchy, Quentin Tarantino, all that. And then CBS is like, oh, let's make him a suburban dad of two daughters.
Yeah, it's not going to work. He also did a very weird fake documentary where he plays a guy whose last name is Bronco, and they try to tell you that the Bronco truck was themed after him, and it's a fiction. It's a really great concept, not executed perfectly, but worthy of like a watch, just because there's some real funny shit in there.
It's one of the best trailers ever, though. If we did like trailers that didn't make a, you know, the show didn't live up to the trailer, it'd be right up there.
I saw the trailer. I'm like, this is going to be perfect. And then I watched it. I'm like, it wasn't so perfect, but it was a really, really great idea. Hey friends, I hope you enjoyed today's conversation with our good friend Connie Collinsworth. You can find more out about her over at La Honda Records, where she manages some of the brightest new up-and-coming country music stars, but like new country that sounds like old country, like classy country. Man, just go over to La Honda and figure it out for yourself. Coming to part two, I share with her the story of TanaCon, which is a story of a woman that got asked not to come to VidCon, which is the big YouTube convention. So she said, fuck that. I'll start my own convention and I'll do it on the same day. I like that. That's punk rock. That's what people should do. If the establishment won't let you be a part of the party, throw your own party. Problem is, the party she threw was a disaster. And they sold 5,500 tickets for a room that I think holds 1,500 people. So you can kind of see where this is going. It's that Fyre Fest environment, or Fyre Fest, I should say. Fyre Fest was what I did. It's that Fyre Fest environment that I adore so much. And then after that, we're going to look at this trend where, you know, it's definitely 100% okay to talk about mental health issues. And it's cool that so many people are coming forth and saying, you know, I have a learning disability, or I suffer from this mental illness, or I have this going on. Like, it's very cool that we're in a moment where that is evenly shared. But whenever something like that comes out, the SEO bandits come right in behind it, and they take this very cool movement and they just try to bastardize it and use it for themselves as a talking point. Or a way to get attention, because, you know, like back at the design conferences, there was a few people that were brave enough to be like, I failed on my career, but this is what I learned from my failures. And then you fast forward 3 years later, every fucking speaker is like, let me talk to you today about failure. And we're getting in a moment where there's people that just want some sort of attention. So it's mental health this, mental health that. And what they're doing is they're messing up the movement. They're clouding it. They're ruining it for the people that are actually trying to do good for themselves and for everyone else, because they're just hijacking it and making it all about them. So we're going to preview a podcast, if I haven't upsold it enough, that I'm going to say probably has little to no business talking about said mental health. We have an hour more of Connie and I hanging out talking pop culture waiting for you over at AID.network. That's where the Circle of Trust lives. That's how I'm able to put out three podcasts a week. And that's how I'm able to sit down and do a two-hour ripper with my good friend Connie and hopefully give you some company while you're doing whatever you're doing that's great today. If you want to hear part two, head over to AID.network. Join the Circle of Trust. That's where part two of today's episode with Connie Collinsworth is starting right now. So, Connie, if you don't mind, I would love to transition over into some real-world drama. And as I've been on this adventure on trying to figure out like my spot in YouTube, when I first got into YouTube, I was like, whoa, this is really hard to grow at. Like, it is a very, very hard platform to grow. And so after realizing how much I had to learn about filmmaking and editing, and then also just the overall algorithm, I decided to just become a consumer of YouTube, because like podcasting was easy for me. All I had to do was make a show that sounded like the radio. But YouTube is different because it's not TV. It's its own category of video. It's not cinema. It's not TV. It's YouTube. It's very different. So in studying it for like 12 or 18 months, I started to realize who the big players were in YouTube. And then the most magical thing happened to me, Connie. I realized that YouTube had its own stars, and because these stars were just regular people that got famous and wealthy too fast, YouTube had its own level of self-destruction. But because it's a democracy, you know, and there's so many different people in there making all kinds of channels, that when one of these stars falls, there's so many people that cover it. So instead of just having like TMZ is the one place where you go to get the shit talk, you have 1,000 TMZs. And so you can find a couple that like resonate for you. So what I wanted to bring you into, and we could literally like once a month, we could watch a video on this topic, because that's how often it's been covered. But this one's pretty concise. I want to bring you into the world of TanaCon.
Yeah, you mentioned this to me before, and I'm unspoiled. I didn't go look it up, so I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm excited to share this with you, because I think you'll enjoy this, because there's enough meat on the bone for it to be interesting,